What is up, everyone? I'm Ryan Garcia. This is Fireside Yankees, joined by Jacob and Chris for another episode. This one coming out on Tuesday instead of Tuesday because of we had a big event yesterday. Jacob, I know it was a tough loss, but it was a great game, a great national championship. Miami still got all the way there. That I don't think anybody else in this podcast right now can say that their team played in the 2025 national championship. Sorry, Chris. And I don't have a team. Okay. So, hey, at least you were national champions in 2024.
Like, I got to see my team do it a year ago. Like, I'm good.
We'll start with Jacob because I think this is more about Jacob here. Jacob, how you doing, man? How you feeling after that loss?
I mean, it's devastating, man. I can't, like, to be that close. I think you said it before we started recording. If it was a blowout, it probably would have been a little bit less painful. But the fact that we were in it until the very end, the fact that we had a chance until the last drive, until the last play where Beck threw a salami sandwich right to the corner, it makes it feel like this team really was deserving of being there. And after a lot of people said, oh, this team didn't deserve it, this team is only in because they wanted ACC representation, they had a hell of a postseason run. And they played really well against the 16-0 Indiana football team that we've never seen anything like before. So I'm happy with it, even though it was a sour taste at the end.
And Chris, after seeing a national championship that included a Big Ten team and an ACC team, notably not an SEC team, yeah. How are you feeling and how are you doing in general, not just
you
national
know,
football?
I am Mr. Yeah. The SEC narrative stuff is super corny, so I was happy that it was Miami and Indiana. But obviously, as a Big Ten guy, good to see Indiana win. But I think Jacob deserves to see a title in his time. So, you know, it's one of those things. But I'm good. I'm good, guys. You know, hanging out.
I agree that he deserves to see a title. It should be with the Yankees, though. That's where I'm at. I don't care if Miami wins or doesn't, but I think it should be the Yankees.
This marks the start. It's officially baseball season right now. I'm a Mets fan. I'm not worried about basketball. I have to wait another like 2 or 3 years for them to draft some guys and get good. So it's baseball season now. We're locking in.
And for me, I mean, as a Knicks fan right now, I don't have anything to care about because they stink. They suck. They're terrible. Trade everybody. And I'm at that point with Brunson where I'm kind of like losing. I'm not naming a kid Jalen, maybe, but we'll see. With that being said, let's start by talking about the breaking news over the time in which between when we recorded and we're recording now. Ryan Weathers was traded to the New York Yankees from the Miami Marlins. This was for four prospects, that being Brendan Jones, Dylan Lewis. We also saw Juan Mathis involved in this deal, and I believe the last piece was Dylan Hasso. So two guys in double A, one guy in high A, another guy who finished in high A as well, but spent most of the year in single A. We'll start with Chris here. Chris, how did you feel about this trade, and how do you feel about Ryan Weathers in general?
It feels good to add a pitcher, right? Like, we all talked about this team needs to add starting pitching, and, you know, obviously, like, he wasn't, you know, a big part of things last year. You hope that the health is good. And then when you see the deal, it's like you hate to lose a kid like Dylan Lewis because obviously we all like the EV numbers. But, you know, a lefty throwing 97 to 98 like that. And it just feels like someone who like Matt Blake can really kind of continue to unlock. And he's cost controlled and affordable. So, and also it doesn't stop you from adding another move. So I like it. It is, to me, just a win. Like, that's all it is a win. And the Yankees need more of those. So it did feel good to at least have something, have another player to like watch highlights of and like study after the deal gets done. But yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's kind of, we've been harboring on this all off season long. You can't go into the season with Yarbrough as your number five and Blackburn as your number six. And Weathers gives us that guy that'll fill out the bottom of the rotation depth with as our vets are recovering from injury. And if everyone comes back healthy, then Weathers seems like a guy who can kick it to the bullpen fairly easily based on how his stuff plays. And the way I see it, Weathers isn't, like you said, he's not a replacement for a Freddy Peralta or a Mackenzie Gore. He's more of in the tier of Edward Cabrera, where I think he's very similar issues in terms of health, issues in terms of he's not really complete. He's never really put together a complete season before, but you can see in both of them that the ceiling is there. They both have pretty similar stuff and location plus grades on Fangraphs, and they both have had health issues. And obviously Weathers has more extreme health issues, but he also has slightly better command. So it's like there's a trade-off there. I think the deal we got him for is better than the deal the Cubs got Cabrera for, because they gave up a big prospect in Casey. And we didn't have to give up anyone to that degree, even though Lewis is a good prospect. I think it's a risk worth taking for sure.
And I have to agree with both of you. I mean, I think that if you are someone who understands how the Yankees have operated pitching-wise over the last few years and can see the work that Sam Breen and Matt Blake have put into this pitching lab, you understand why the Yankees can take in a guy throwing 97 miles per hour on the fastball, throws a plus changeup, has a plus slider, and see why they think they can make this guy better. He was a former top 10 pick. I don't think it's fair to say that he's lived up to his prospect type, but he's shown flashes of being able to be a quality big league starter. There's even upside to say that he can end up being a guy who is your third starter. I've kind of done some digging around in terms of his pitch mix, and the sinker stands out as a pitch. I know that he mentioned in his introductory like press zoom thing that the two-seamer is a pitch that the Yankees have already identified as something he should throw more. He was a reverse splits guy last year. He struggled to prevent damage against lefties. Kind of a natural way to improve that is to get more ground balls against lefties and to throw a damage-preventing pitch. I don't think the Yankees have to do much work in this profile outside of maybe tweaking the sinker and trying to find a way to keep him healthy. Like, that's really the two keys here. It's availability, not really ability. And I think the Yankees should be taking those kinds of gambles. The first question I have for you guys, or the second question I guess I have for you guys in regard to Ryan Weathers, and Jacob, we'll start with you. How many starts do you think he ends up making for the Yankees this year? Is it all 30? Like, how many do you think he ends up making for the Yankees?
That's an interesting one, because like I said, I think he's going to be the first man to kick to the bullpen role if everyone comes back healthy. But you're never going to assume that you're going to have all five of your top five pitchers, starting pitchers, healthy at once. So I'm going to assume he's going to be more of a swingman type, maybe 15 to 20 starts and another 15 to 20 appearances out of the bullpen, assuming he stays fairly healthy throughout the season. My biggest concern is that he won't stay healthy, because he hasn't. So he's never pitched a full MLB season so far. But one last thing I want to touch on in terms of his mix. The thing I like the most about him is his fastball velocity has consistently risen over each of the last four seasons. It was at 93.5 miles per hour in 2022. It's up to 97 this past season. And I saw a clip, I think it was on like the Max Manis podcast, where he talked about after the 2023 season, he really started getting invested in like the data, the pitch biomechanics data that the Bendix installed down in Miami. So if Weathers is just he's only had 2 years with that data in his within his scope, if he's only just scratching the surface with that, then I could see even more improvements going forward. So I really like him as in that swingman role,
and health wise too, like getting into kind of the biomechanics, like that side of it way later, I think definitely is a really plus thing for him. I think probably 20 starts is probably a good number. I'm interested to see how quick kind of Matt Blake can work his magic on him. And then obviously the health is so hard to predict, but I would say about 20 starts as well.
You know, I was kind of going back and forth on this because pitcher health is so hard to project, but I think part of this is also baking in how well you think he'll perform relative to other starters. And I think the biggest competition he faces, as the roster looks right now, is Warren and Heel. It's really a matter of which of these three guys gets kicked to the curb first in the rotation, or not kicked to the curb, kicked to the bullpen, kicked to the curbs a little bit, I guess violent in terms of dramatic. How they're evaluated. Yeah, it's a little dramatic. But I think Weathers, I have the opinion that Weathers outlasts both of them. And the reason I believe that's the case, it's not an indictment on either player. I think all three of these players come with flaws, but again, for a contender, let's look at the Dodgers, for example. Everybody like compares their organization to the Dodgers because they're the gold standard right now. What have the Dodgers bet on? It's ability or availability, not ability. Blake Snell was a signing they made knowing that he's unlikely to make 30 starts a year. Mm-hmm. Yoshinobu Yamamoto didn't have significant injury risk, but he's a smaller guy. So there is some injury risk you just bake into paying a smaller pitcher. Kershaw for all these years, I mean, Kershaw is kind of the poster child for off injured, but healthy when you kind of need him kind of guy. Although he's pitching with Team USA, despite the fact he's retired. That's a little bit interesting. Ohtani, Tyler freaking Glasnow is... No, honestly, I just got to take that away from Kershaw. Tyler Glasnow is the CEO of being injured. Is that fair to say he's like the prototypical like guy that Jeff Fry screams about pitching-wise, where it's max effort throwing and he's always hurt. Roki Sasaki's always hurt. Like, that's how the Dodgers have built their roster. It's led to situations where Walker Buehler's getting a start in game three, but it's also led to situations where they've got this monstrous starting rotation for the postseason. I think I like that the Yankees are betting on ability, and at the end of the day, like, they needed another starting pitcher. I do want to ask one final question. It's going to come up a little bit later, but this is, does pertain to Weathers. Do you guys believe, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how badly do the Yankees need another starting pitcher after this deal? I imagine it would be someone better than Weathers, but that's not here or there. It doesn't even have to be. I'll leave that one more open-ended, and Jacob, will start with you on that one.
1 to 10, I'd probably say you're like a 4 or 5 right now. It would be really nice to get another starter, but if we're going to get another starter, it has to be someone that's going to be starting playoff games. It doesn't really make much sense to add another depth guy. We've got a pretty decent depth looking at it right now, especially if you think that Elmer Rodriguez is going to be ready by sometime like the spring or the summer to come up and make some spot starts. I think we have a lot of like decent back-end options right now. So if we're going to make a trade, it should be for someone that we think is better than our options near the top of the rotation.
I agree. I mean, I think we all agree. I think we all agree that, like, with Weathers, this we're in a better spot than we were a year ago heading into spring training.
100%.
And so maybe 5. I mean, obviously, like, you want someone who's going to make a playoff start. But I agree with Jacob. Like, no more depth pieces. I think you're good, because really the goal is to kind of survive until Rodon and Cole get back. And I think Weathers kind of helps you do that. Probably 5. You'd love to add like another playoff arm, but you know, right now it's just better than it was a year ago.
I also think there was an importance of just getting another guy in the room. Like, you need a certain amount of starters, is what I kind of consistently kept saying on the podcast. If they didn't add another starter, I wasn't going to view these guys as contenders. You just can't sell me on a rotation that doesn't have a better option than Elmer Rodriguez or Paul Blackburn if somebody were to go down. Now that exists on the roster, and more importantly, it's a guy who's got upside. It's not, you know, I'm not trying to be insulting here, but it's not Nick Martinez. It's not, and he's a Hall of Famer, but Justin Verlander. There's no upside to these guys. Right, exactly. You can sign these guys still between now and spring training. Heck, you have some of these guys on the roster. You've got a Paul Blackburn. I think Ryan Yarbrough is better than Marcus Stroman, but and like Carlos Carrasco, but that feels like an unimportant conversation to have if we're comparing Ryan Yarbrough.
How excited are you about his upside, out of curiosity, Ryan?
Weathers?
Yeah.
I'm absolutely excited, dude. Like, it's cool, because who's like the last project starter the Yankees have given Matt Blake? Is it like Jameson Taillon or Nestor Cortez? Like, are those the last two projects?
Yeah, it was Luke Weaver, but then we just kept him in the bullpen.
But I don't think the intention was to ever make him a starter after 23.
He was stretched out at the beginning of 24, but then
yeah,
he was throwing some cheese. They said, all right, let's keep him back there.
I just mean more so in the sense of a guy who you expect to start for you, not a guy you bring in like, you know, he's depth if somebody gets hurt, or like, we really primarily envision you in a bullpen role, or like, Weaver's Paul Blackburn, I think. Mm-hmm. They're like the same people in terms of like their initial role. Not saying Blackburn's going to go out and have the year Weaver did, although that's the hope in this situation, but Weathers has more upside, I think, than Taillon did when he was traded here, just because Tyone's coming back from multiple Tommy Johns. Although you could argue like Taillon peaked as a better prospect, I think that's completely fair to say. Actually, it's objectively true. But Weathers has like a lot of upside. I just think it's fun to bring in a guy like that, where it's not a reliever, it's a starting pitcher. It's a guy who you can turn into your next like stud pitcher. His stuff mirrors a lot of like top line starting pitchers. The foundation of this repertoire: sweeper, changeup, fastball, sinker. You don't really have to like. It's not like I have to like stretch my imagination here and go, if he does this and that and this and that. It's like, throw the sinker more, and I think he's a better pitcher. Stays healthy, I think he's a better pitcher. Like, it's that simple.
It's health. Yeah, it's health, right?
Right. And I would rather you bet on availability than ability for the Yankees. You need to bet on guys staying healthy, not on guys hoping that they miraculously become much better than they already are. That's what I'm really getting at here.
The way I see it is like, before that trade was made, if someone went down, it was going to be Yarbrough or Blackburn making starts. And it's like, you're going to expect at least one to go down. Mm-hmm. And that might still be the case right now, depending on what happens. But the fact of the matter is, you have so much more flexibility in terms of, you can go out and get someone who's still a free agent during spring training if someone gets hurt. You can go out and make a trade. You can outlast the depth that we have right now for at least a few weeks or a couple of months into the season in a way that you couldn't say that a few weeks ago. So I don't think there's like, everyone's going to be itching for a Freddy Peralta trade still. And I personally will get to that later, but I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't think that needs to happen right now, because we have that depth. We can reevaluate where we're at once Cole and Rodon get back in the midseason. We'd see who's available on the trade market. It really just, it makes this a much easier 162 to get through, having that type of depth.
again, it's just there's just a fundamental difference between having Ryan Weathers and not having Ryan Weathers. But any final thoughts before we move on and talk about everybody's favorite subject? The thing that you're all waiting for, another round of is Cody Bellinger coming back? And it kind of feels like every time we do this, there is just another like, I don't know, man, I can't. I'm gonna open this in not a rant. It's more of just kind of I think what we all feel. Both, I'm sure Bellinger feels this way. Writers, fans, podcasters, whoever you are in relation to the Yankees or Scott Boras's camp, we're tired of this. Nobody wants to keep doing this. Nobody. I speak for everybody when I say nobody wants to keep doing this. Here's the rundown, okay? The Yankees have 5 years, $160 million. They've got two opt-outs, apparently a signing bonus on top of that, although I guess that isn't something we can confirm because we don't have an official document with the offer in front of us, but that's the implication from multiple outlets. The Mets don't want to go long-term. The Blue Jays don't want him. The Phillies don't want to do anything else. Short-term, long-term, Bellinger, just pick. That's really it. Short-term, long-term, you want 5 years, you want 3 years. Pick your poison. Let's hurry this shit up. I understand that there's no CBA right for the Yankees to get this done or for Bellinger to come back for the Yankees. The Yankees don't have a right to get an answer before February. For Bellinger, he doesn't have a right to 7 years. But like we know everything I feel like we're going to know about Bellinger. Chris, I'll start with you, man. Like, what are your thoughts on this, man?
I agree with you. I want it to be over. It is fascinating seeing kind of the Yankees publicly, I feel like, play hardball with Cody Bellinger because like the fact that all these details are getting out there, that's like a very like Yankee thing. Like, look, we tried to get a deal done. This is like Scott Boras hanging it up. We have gone above the uncomfortable level to get a deal done, and he's still not getting it done. And what are the reports? Like, we're prepared to move on if he wants to do a bidding war, we're not doing it. So for me, it's like, I think that the 160 with two opt-outs is good enough. I think that's a great offer. I think that's going to be a final offer. I still think he's a Yankee, but the whole thing has been really frustrating as we kind of, you know, wait for this to play out. But it feels like, honestly, to me, it feels a lot like Scott Boras is being super stubborn and thinking the Yankees are going to fold. The issue is like, there might not be another option that's willing to offer him a better deal.
Yeah, I think everyone's going to kill Boras for this. He's just doing his job, which is like, all right, man, like everyone's going to hate him for it. Everyone knows this is how it goes. What's trying to happen right now is Mets are probably at 3 years. We're at 5 years. He wants to either get the fourth year from the Mets or the sixth year from the Yankees. I don't think either front office is going to budge based on how these front offices have operated in the last few off seasons. I don't think we go to six, and I don't want to go to six personally, and I don't think the Mets are going to go to fourth year because they just traded Nimmo because they're so afraid of him falling off in the later years of his contract. So I think he's going to have to pick, like what Ryan said, he's going to be picking between 3 years with the Mets or 5 years with the Yankees. And I think based on how he plays in our park and based on how good of a year he had this past year and how much he's acclimated himself to the Bronx, I think he should stick with our offer. And I don't think he's going to get anything better than that.
And, you know, I want to piggyback off the point you said about Boras here. I am frustrated this is dragged out, but I want to clarify, like, the New York Yankees have signaled to Scott Boras and anybody who can spell the word baseball that the only free agent they're seriously interested in investing significant financial capital in is Cody Bellinger. If I was an agent, and if I was Scott Boras, I would do the exact same thing, which is wait these people out because they're either A, going to give in, or B, not land the player. That's what's going to happen. They're either going to, or I guess, see, I'm going to sign the contract.
But I'd argue we've already waited it out. It's like we've already played Boras's game is my thing.
I mean, now that everyone else is off the board, I get that. And I think it's going to come to a conclusion soon. I assume by next podcast, he's going to be on a team, whether it's us or the Mets. But like we just saw with Bichette, I'm not going to lie, that's a ridiculous contract from the Mets that Bichette just got. And they only got it because the Mets lost out on Tucker at the last minute and Cohen and Stearns were pissed off. So they did a little rage spend to try to steal Bichette from the Phillies. And it worked out for Bichette and he got a better deal than what he would have gotten otherwise. So I get why Boras has waited so far. But in terms of what else there is to what else needs to fall, there's not many more. He doesn't have any cards left in the deck. There's nothing else to wait for now. It's basically choose between these two contracts because these teams aren't going to go further than what they are right now.
Well, and these teams are not going to negotiate against themselves. Like, this is not two teams negotiating against each other. They're not. These are not two teams that are like in a bidding war. These are two teams offering their like circumstantially two different types of deals, and Scott Boras still wants them to bid against themselves.
I also do think it's important to note in this that there is a little bit of, like, as you guys mentioned, I think the Mets are where they're at, and I think the Yankees are where they're at with this. Like, I think that's, like, this isn't a situation where I anticipate it comes out that the Yankees gave Bellinger a 6-year, $180 million contract, although I could be wrong. And for the Mets, I don't see them increasing if they made an offer, their offer. I don't see a willingness to go long-term with Bellinger, nor do I think it's a wise decision for them. I feel like the Yankees' already existing offer is an underwater contract the second Bellinger signs it. For the Mets, I would feel even stronger about that because this is a guy who's pretty, not like entirely reliant on the short porch. He wouldn't suck. Like, he's not a below average hitter without Yankee Stadium. I know that's the home road splits this year, but I think those are a little dramatic. This is not a great hitter if he does not have that porch, though. This is a good player. And I think Bichette's even better than a good player.
A good player. And the reason that Boris wanted to get him to New York on a walk year was because of that. Because he wanted to benefit from the short porch before heading into free agency.
Which is even like the more confusing thing about the Mets, like, short-term opt-out after every deal kind of angle, because is he going to improve his stock playing in Citi Field offensively?
Well, he's locked in. Like, if he takes that Mets deal, he's staying there for this.
Right, he's not opting out. And so, like, I'll even say this, and I don't know how you guys feel about this. If Scott Boras takes, let's say, 3-120 from the Mets over 5-160 with opt-outs and a signing bonus from the Yankees, that wasn't business, that's personal, and the Yankees should block Scott Boras' number. They should assume they're never going to get a fair negotiation with him again. That would be so unbelievably bad for the client.
Just bad.
You should fire your agent if you do that. Like, I'm not even trying. And I know, like, this is going to get clipped as, like, salty Yankee fan. Like, I've been pretty consistent all offseason about my skepticism of Cody Bellinger, the free agent. That's why I was so big on Tucker. That's why I've been like, don't go past 5 years even for Bellinger. This is not Yankee boy talking about the Mets and not liking the Mets. So he's going to say this, that, and a third. But I will also say, like, if that happens, I've got to wonder, because that's the player's decision at the end of the day. The agent can't force you to sign somewhere.
Right.
I don't love what that would mean for the Yankees if another player spent 1 year with you, had a really good year, quote-unquote really enjoyed their time, stayed in the city, and then left. But left. Like, stay in the city, but left. I wouldn't want that.
You to get it done. Like, Scott Boras.
Right, like, that would scare me a little bit. Not for, like, financial reasons. That would scare me in the sense of, why do the Mets are the desirable location, not you, then. That's what that would signal to me. And I don't think that's the case.
No, I think
but that's what that would signal.
This whole narrative with that is, I think most of the guys who have left the Yankees for the Mets have done so for better contracts or better situations. Like, Clay Holmes wasn't going to start with us. He had a starting opportunity with them, so that's why he left. Juan Soto got, like, 40 or 50 more million dollars to go to the Mets. If Bellinger leaves for the Mets, I'm sure it'll be because they think the contract offer is significantly better. And if it is a situation where he takes what we perceive to be the worst deal, then, yeah, we could start having that conversation about what's wrong, why guys don't want to stay here.
But I'll also say, when it comes to if he comes back, like, if the Yankees sign to a 5-year, $160 million deal, it'll be an overpay. Like, I'm not going to shy away from that. But the Yankees do get better. And I think that's... And I'll also, like, as someone who does this both as a fan and as someone who does this as a content creator, I'll be happy it's over. I'll be happy I don't have to talk about whether he's going to sign or not.
Everyone's been caught up in this. Like, we all got a little bit of a we're going a little stir crazy here, waiting for the season. And this just being dragged out has made us forget, like, if we re-sign Bellinger, we're probably the best team on paper in the American League. We're probably the second best team in baseball behind the Dodgers on paper if we keep Bellinger.
You have us on paper better than Toronto if we sign Bellinger?
I think so. The way the projections are looking right now, we're about even with them as things stand. And if we bring in Bellinger over Dominguez in left field, that just instantly, it's like night and day on defense. And then Bellinger's probably a better hitter all around too. So, like, that's probably a 2 or 3 win improvement at least.
I also have to say, and I don't know how you guys feel about this, because I guess I didn't really, like, include this in our, like, little pre-show outline, but I think it is important to talk about, kind of huge that Tucker signs with the Dodgers and then Bichette doesn't go back to Toronto, right? Like, that definitely changes our outlook, because I think for most of this podcast, like, as we've been doing this, as we've been talking about the AL East and the Yankees in comparison, it's been like, man, the added incentive with Tucker is you stealing him away from the Blue Jays. Well, he's not on the Blue Jays, and it doesn't, I'm not saying that you do things in reaction to your division rival. Again, like, I want to maintain that is an unwise thing to do. But I do think this does give you a little bit of like a deep breath or a sigh of relief in the sense that if you just do what you were supposed to do this offseason, you should be in a really good spot. I don't think the Blue Jays had a bad offseason, but I don't think the Blue Jays did what they wanted to do this offseason. Is that fair to say?
No, I think my issue, like, I was scared of the Blue Jays in December because they'd made their moves and it looked like they were going to make another move or two. People were saying after they signed Okamoto that it's like, are we doing Tucker or Bo or both on top of Okamoto? And it's like, all right, now that's off the table. And it seems like they've cooled off on Bellinger. They're not really in on that. So it's like, what else can they do? And in terms of who they've lost and who they've replaced them with, like, they've improved. I think they've improved this offseason, but they haven't improved to the point where they're solidified at the top of the division right now. If we sign Bellinger, we're kind of running back the same team, but the same team at the end of last season was better than the team at the start of last season. So I think we'll be in a very good position to win the division as long as Toronto doesn't do anything crazy that we weren't expecting, as long as we re-sign Bellinger.
And I also think it plays into the conversation of, like, look, as underwhelming, like, this offseason's been pretty boring for the Yankees. I think we all kind of hope that more would be done by now. Not to say that it can't be made up for in the next couple of weeks, but I think we all can at least agree, like, we all kind of anticipated more to be done by now. It reinforces to me that, all right, we can say it's luck, we can say it's this, whatever it may be, they're not in a great American League. To their benefit, that is not in their control, and, like, yes, part of that is luck, and you can't control that, and you can't control, you could have controlled it, but you didn't try any attempt to keep Tuck away from Toronto, or Bichette away from Toronto, or Bregman away from the Red Sox. You didn't try any of those things, and they all left. You need luck to win sometimes. Like, you need luck. Like, you just do.
You think about the rest of this AL. Outside of our division, the best team in the AL is definitely Seattle.
Yes.
Like, what have they done since bringing back Naylor?
And I will say this, like, do you not think the Dodgers benefit from their general lack of inactivity in their own division? Like, the fact that the Padres are bleeding money and had their owner die, unfortunately. Yeah. The fact that the Giants have gone from, in the 2010s, a gold standard franchise to cheap and rather misguided with Buster Posey. The Rockies are the dumbest organization in baseball. The Diamondbacks are so cursed that every time they touch a pitcher, he dies. So, like, these things, and the Diamondbacks almost traded Ketel Marte. Like, the Diamondbacks are not, like, they're probably the best team in that division, or the Padres, right? Like, is that, or the second best, sorry.
I think the Diamondbacks are going to finish ahead of the Padres. The Padres' depth just scares me.
Where would they finish in the AL East?
The D-backs?
Any of those two teams, fifth, fourth?
I'd say probably fourth.
Are they better than the Orioles?
Probably about the same tier. And then I'm assuming that they would probably finish above one of the, whether it's Boston or Baltimore, based on how the season goes luck-wise for either of those teams. But yeah, you're right. Like, I will say the Dodgers, they've had stiff competition the past few years. The Padres were very good through this past season. But, like, going forward, it looks like it's a free path for them.
Yeah, I'm just saying more so in the sense of, like, not saying it's a cakewalk, but that's not like the Dodgers control the fact that the Giants hired Buster Posey. You know, like, that's not in their control. You kind of need these things to happen for you, you know, to win a World Series. The Rangers, like, greatly benefited from the Astros' decline in front office quality and capitalized in 2023. The Braves played in the NL East with a Phillies team that spends, but's generally not the most well-versed in process. I mean, they just gave JT Realmuto $45 million for whatever reason. The Mets in the initial Steve Cohen years. The first few Stephen Cohen years were very tumultuous, especially 21. The Marlins back then. The Mike Rizzo Nationals. Like, again, I'm not praising the Yankees for these things. I'm just saying when you find yourself in this situation, whether it's because of your control or not, it's usually a good thing. So,
yeah. It's like, this is, we got to capitalize. We've won the AL once in this decade, and this AL is not getting much harder the way things look. So go out there and win it again this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to look at the free agent list real quick, and it's like the top guys in terms of projected WAR for this upcoming season on FanGraphs. I know it's not a perfect science, but it is what it is. Tucker, National League. Bichette, National League. Bregman, National League. Cease, American League. Valdez, TBD. Suarez, American League. National League. Schwarber, National League. King. Ellinger is either going to go to the Yankees or the National League. Alonso went from the NL to the AL. Woodruff stayed in the National League. Torres stayed. Like, these are, but these are no longer like the cream of the cream in the free agent class. Ketel Marte didn't go from the NL to the AL. These are wins, even if they don't affect you. So, like, I got a lot of comments of like, you shouldn't try now because Tucker's on the Dodgers. And I'm like, you don't even know if you're going to play them in the World Series. You can tell me, you could give them a 90% chance to get the one seed and then 70% odds at winning each of the consecutive rounds. And they'll have like a 44% chance of going to the World Series.
Dude, shit goes wrong in baseball all the time. Like,
the Dodgers weren't even the one seed this year.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how good you are on paper. Even the Dodgers almost lost to Toronto. They were a few pitches away from losing to Toronto in the World Series, and everyone seems to have forgotten that, but it was that close. And Toronto was certainly not the better team than the Dodgers on paper. So anything can happen in baseball, anything can happen in the playoffs. And we have a chance to win the division now, go out and re-sign Bellinger, win the division, have a bye, and then go take this American League.
Yeah, we'll see what ends up happening with the rest of the American League and the Yankees and Bellinger. I think that's a good way to kind of tie that Bellinger bow. Like, hey, if we bring Bellinger back, not a lot of competition in front of you in terms of juggernauts, although projections are projections. They can be wrong. There's whatever. But let's move on to Freddie Peralta, because the Yankees have reported heavy interest in Freddie Peralta. That's according to The Athletic. The smoke is still there. And I think that the expectation after they traded for Ryan Weathers for like the first hour or two was that they're going to stop shopping for top line starting pitching. But that changed as soon as, I think it was Brendan Cuddy and Chris Kirschner in a joint article. They reported that they're still in. The Dodgers and Mets are among competitors. I think that this is going to be an interesting saga. Chris, we'll start with you here, and then we'll go to Jacob, because I know Jacob has very opinionated on this topic. Chris, first and foremost, do you still think the Yankees can end up with Freddie Peralta, and how scared of you are you of his other suitors?
It's funny. I did see the Dodgers report. I think the Brewers wouldn't do that to baseball. In my head, I believe the Brewers just love baseball way too much to trade Peralta to the Dodgers. But no, honestly, this is Jacob's domain. Like, when the Weathers trade happened, for me, I felt like he wasn't a good enough pitcher for you if the Brewers were looking to move Peralta, for you to like ignore, especially when you didn't have to give up any big time prospects. But you know, I listen to Jacob a lot, and he doesn't think he's going to get traded. So I kind of defer to him on this whole topic. Now, look, I would love Peralta in New York. I mean, it'd be awesome. I obviously want to see what the haul is, but again, like, Jacob's been pretty adamant. He's not getting dealt. He's not getting dealt to New York. So I kind of more defer to him on this one.
Listen, man, I don't doubt that we're trying. I really don't. I don't doubt that we're offering some really good packages right now. But like I've been saying this entire offseason, the Brewers do not have incentive to trade him without an overpay. And I'm not talking about a fair trade. They will not make this trade unless they get more than they're giving up. Which for us, for me personally, I don't think that's worth it for us. And then you talk about for the Dodgers and the Mets, these are teams in the NL. The Brewers are probably going to even charge a premium to them. So I just think it's most likely that he doesn't get traded. And if he does get traded, I will say, I think we're in probably a decent position to do so, because like I said, they probably want to trade him back to the American League rather than the National League because they're still contending. But I don't know. I just don't think a 94. They won the most games in the NL last year, and I know they did. They did this with Burns. They did this with Devin Williams. They did this with Hader. But the Brewers have an elite farm system right now. They are loaded. They have so much young talent on that team. And Freddie Peralta only makes $8 million this year, and he's their number one or number 1B to Woodruff, depending on who's healthy. I just can't see them trading a guy who will absolutely be a playoff starter and an essential piece of a championship-caliber team for prospects when they already have prospects. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I think ultimately with Freddie Peralta, and I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I think that we're at the point where the conversations have heated up because the Brewers are liking what they're getting. That's my read on it. I could be wrong, but it seems like that price tag's going to be high. Like, if the Yankees trade for Freddie Peralta, I imagine one of LaGrange and Elmer are gone at the very least, and one of Warner and Hueller gone, and I think there's another piece or two attached. Probably one piece. I don't see a 4-for-1 for a rental coming from the Yankees. It's not very Cashman-like, but for a rental starting pitcher, I mean, we talked about this last time where, Jacob, I think you mentioned specifically you wouldn't trade LaGrange plus for Peralta. I think that's what's going to take. So I imagine if the Brewers and Yankees get a deal done, it'll be that price tag. And I think for the Brewers, that would be the win, right? Like, I think, would that fit your definition of a thing the Brewers would do because they were overwhelmed by the price tag, or do you not consider it that?
I mean, it depends how the Brewers view LaGrange. It depends how they view the other pieces we'd be adding to that trade. But if they do any trade, all I'm saying is if they do any trade, it's because they think the pieces they're getting back are more valuable to them than Peralta would be. So I would be wary of any trade that gets completed, even if Peralta comes our way.
Well, I think he'll go ahead.
It's very much like Jacob said it. I mean, they have a good farm system. If you're going to trade for Peralta, you're likely going to trade for someone that they don't have, someone that looks like that in their farm. Like LaGrange fits that. Like they don't have someone that looks like that. And so that would make me nervous for a rental trade.
I will also say, I mean, look at the Devin Williams trade. I think, I'm not saying it to say the Yankees had bad process in that deal. You traded for an elite level closer, but I think all of us kind of looked at that and went, really? That's it? Like a guy who got shut down late in the year because of an elbow issue, and that ended up turning out to be what we forecasted it to be, which was a serious elbow issue that required Tommy John surgery at the conclusion of the season. He didn't pitch much and didn't look good. And then Caleb Durbin. And Durbin was like a non-top 10, top 15 prospect in a lot of outlets. Turns out he should have been ranked inside of the top 10, top 15. But that's the Brewers. They know what they're doing. I'm sure the Yankees knew what they were doing too. I'm sure they knew that Durbin internally was better than, I don't know, like a 25th overall prospect or their 25th best prospect. I'm sure they were aware of that, and that's why they got the deal done. I would kind of tremble a little bit at the idea of Carlos LaGrange getting to develop there and not being able to reap the benefit from that. And also the knowledge of, I don't want to extend Freddy Peralta. That has to be part of the trade cost, right? Like, I don't want to extend him. His takedown price is going to be high enough where I would just go, why are you not in on Tarik Skubal then? The Yankees, we could talk about like their attendance in free agent talks for like really good, not elite free agents, but their attendance on elite, elite players hitting free agency is impeccable. Is Shohei Ohtani the last like great free agent they showed absolutely zero interest in? And before that, Bryce Harper? Is that, and I would argue Harper's wasn't coming off a platform year great enough to consider him a better free agent than Judge or Soto or Cole or Ohtani or Skubal this upcoming year. So I expect the Yankees to like at least be in to an extent. I'm not saying they're going to get him, but you shouldn't trade for. Yeah, go ahead.
We have a lot more financial flexibility next offseason too. So I'd be surprised if we weren't in on Skubal next winter. But I also think the issue I have with the LaGrange for Peralta is I think LaGrange lines up so well with how our rotation is going to look in a couple of years. You got Cole aging. You got Rodon aging. These guys are not going to be in the rotation by the end of this decade.
And Max
if LaGrange keeps progressing the way he's been progressing, he's going to be a number 2, 3, or 4 starter by 2028, 2029. And that's when we're going to need him. So, I mean, I wouldn't want to give that up for 1 year of Freddie.
Again, I think at the end of the day, I think the Yankees, they might do it. I don't know. Like, we'll see. I don't know. I don't know. That's
they're pushing for it. And I mean,
right, like,
the Brewers are listening. But I think it's one of those situations where the Brewers are going to say, all right, I need a little bit more than that.
Yeah, and also there's a million teams in, and some of those teams could extend him. Like for the Mets and Yankees, for example, neither team should extend the player. There's no reason for them to extend the player before the season starts. Number one, I mean, the takedown price is probably incredibly high. And number two, you want Skubal probably. So, like, I think it'd be pretty anticlimactic. You know, it's funny because a lot of people are going to disagree with this, but I think I'm going to be right if this were to happen. It's not going to happen. People are going to look at Peralta the same way that like, they look at Bellinger or, like, Rizzo, where it's like, oh, well, they could have gotten this other guy instead. And I don't understand why we can't accept that, right? Like, Yankee fans are not going to like the good, not great player they got instead of the great player, right? Like, that's true. That's how they'll look at Peralta. So I don't see a reason to expect, like the Orioles, for example, they can like trade for Peralta with the intent of extending him. The Braves can trade for Peralta with the intent of extending him. The Red Sox, like all these teams can do it because, well, they, maybe the Red Sox wouldn't, but I don't know. All these teams, like the Braves aren't signed to
Red Sox even could. They could absolutely do it. I mean, they
I'm not saying they couldn't. I just mean more so. I just meant more so in the sense of like, the Orioles aren't signing Tarik Skubal. Neither are the Braves.
Oh, right.
Like that sense. Like the Red Sox, I know we kind of make fun of them, but I agree with this
line of thinking, but I think in that sense, the Mets make more sense than we do because they need more than one starting pitcher.
I agree.
So I could see them if they could extend him and then go out and sign Skubal too. And that's something that we just can't do. And it doesn't make sense for us to do. So and the Mets also have a better farm system than us. So it's like that they have the means and the need more so than we do. It's going to come down to whether or not the Brewers are willing to deal within the league, which I'm not sure if they are.
Yeah, again, I mean, I've said this on Twitter a lot, and I'm not saying it. I'm not saying it to be a pessimist. I just think the Mets have more to give, and if the Dodgers are serious about it, they also have more to give. And that's not that's not a Hal is cheap or Cashman isn't trying thing. If you have to give up Elmer Rodriguez and Carlos LaGrange to like, if the Brewers say you have to give up those two to match an offer the Mets are giving, I'm not going to make that offer. That's just not what I'm going to do. There are, I say this, you know, I say this on Twitter. I'll say this here. There's other starters out there too. I imagine are like if the takedown price was Heel LaGrange and I'm trying to just think of like a niche guy. I don't know, Pico Cone, their fourth round pick from last year. I'm taking that ask and I'm shopping it across the league and I'm saying, what else could I get for it? Is that unreasonable? Like I'm not paying the takedown price potentially, and I'm also not paying it without knowing what else I could get. What if the Reds are like, yeah, we'll do that for Nick Lodolo. I get 2 years of a starter. I know it's another lefty, but I get 2 years of a starter. I would do that. It's 2 years of a starter at $4 million less. Like that matters to me. That should matter to any person building a roster, regardless of whether you're someone like me who's like, spend money, or even someone who isn't really that tapped in with baseball. You know what I mean? Like, I think that should be a general roster building philosophy, but that's not here nor there. Any final thoughts on Peralta before we get into our questions?
What do you think he ends up?
I've talked about this plenty. I mean, Brewers.
I think he's a Met. Like, it just makes sense. And also for the Mets, like, kind of like a statement offseason. You get Bichette and Peralta to end your winter. I wouldn't care less about Pete Alonso. I didn't care much about Pete Alonso in the first place. If I'm a Met fan, I would never have cared that he got a horrendous contract from the Orioles. But that's just my baseball philosophy. I understand there's an emotional attachment that I don't have
to Pete Alonso. Wait a second, Ryan. Can I push back just a little bit? Not to make this a Mets podcast. You think, would you like the contract for Pete or would you like the contract for Bo Bichette for them?
Bichette, even though, okay. And I want to say this, like I said this on the Fireside Baseball podcast, quick plug there. So I think it's an overpay, but it's 1 year potentially. And yeah. I think Bichette's probably going to give you more WAR than Alonso will. Like, that's my guess. I think Alonso is a bad contract. I just do. And I think that for Bichette, third base is a more natural home for him than second even. Like, he's a slow-footed infielder. He shouldn't be asked to move a lot, even though the arm strength isn't great. Everyone overrates arm strength. Dansby Swanson has no juice in his arm, and the guy is an elite, elite defender at shortstop. Lindor's arm strength, I want you to check that out on Savant, because everybody keeps screenshotting Savant arm strength and going, this guy can't play the positions. Like, dude, shut up. Like, you don't know what you're talking about, man.
Savant arm strength is the most annoying thing to talk about.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, yeah, it's just not. It's not a relevant statistic. It's not relevant. Like, it's not that important.
I mean, OAA incorporates throws into the formula, so it's like it doesn't really matter. Like, so for Volpe, for example, everyone hates Volpe's defense now, but when he was healthy in 24, he had great OAA, and his arm wasn't big. His arm's never been good, but his transfer, his hand speed's so quick with the transfer that doesn't matter because he gets from ball to glove to throw to first base. It's still a quicker process than most people with big arms because he doesn't have as big of a transfer.
Yeah, like, also, like, good feet, good hands, stump having to throw the ball max effort every trip. Like, if you're an infielder, you have to throw the ball hard, like, every single time. That means something went wrong in the process of you.
Yeah, it's like maybe like, Bichette's the type of guy who needed an arm at shortstop because he didn't have that range, and he didn't have either. So just moving him off of the middle infield where his range isn't as important at third base is a big win for them.
Look, Mark Vientos throws the ball about as hard as Ryan McMahon does at third. Mm-hmm. Luis Franjifo throws the ball about as hard as Manny Machado. Tells you all you need to know.
I mean,
right?
O'Neill Cruz, they said you can't play shortstop anymore.
God, that guy's out.
There was a kid on my high school baseball team, third baseman, a year older than me. Absolute cannon of an arm. But that thing was going into the stands half the time. Like, it's about the power of the arm matters so little compared to everything else in the process of being an infielder.
I'm sure there's a threshold.
Like really low, like slow arms, not great arm strength.
Certainly you have to have a good enough arm to play the position, but like everything else matters more than the arm.
Look, again, I think there are just variables that should go into this that people don't consider, but that's either here nor there. We'll start with fan questions, and we got three really good ones. I almost said a couple means two. The first one we'll take is from Frank Pask 333. Wonder if that's like Pasquantino. I don't know. Just I don't know why I said that. In a perfect world, you're the GM of the New York Yankees. What is your perfect offseason? They put quotation marks, not me. If we do or don't re-sign Bellinger. So we'll start with if we do, And we'll say three players, or how many players do you want to limit this to? Because I think we want like a nice, clean format, not like you can pick five or six players. It's a little bit much.
Does Bellinger count as one of the three players?
Yes, yes. We'll do outfielder, starter, reliever, but you can't like do like...
I'm not going to lie. If we re-sign Bellinger, I don't even know if we have add two more major players.
Okay, outfielder, pitcher. I think that's easy template, right?
All right.
All right, so... Yeah, Jacob, you start us off.
I'll start off. I think if we bring back Bellinger, then I think the position player group is complete. I don't think there's anything else you need to do. And then in terms of pitcher, I think we need a reliever more in the starter as of right now. Obviously, if you can go get a Freddie Peralta, that's the perfect one. But I don't think that's realistic, as I've said numerous times. So I'm going to take a look at who's still available reliever-wise, because it is pretty thin right now. I've been saying it. I like Justin Wilson. I've been saying it all offseason. He's going to be cheap, one-year deal. He's getting old, but his stuff was still good this past year. He had good results, and he's a lefty with a breaking ball. I want that in the bullpen.
Chris, what you got for us?
For me, honestly, if you sign Bellinger, I would be okay with moving pretty significant capital to go get Mackenzie Gore and then trust that one of the guys that they've brought in can move to the bullpen, like Weathers, like we talked about before, or like Warren, or like Keel. And to me, that would be like an A-plus offseason, like given what we've had, given the Play-Doh we've been given right now. So that's kind of what the priority would be for me. But again, like you guys just talked about, like with Bellinger, again, like this would be a great offense again. And with the AL just getting weakened, if you can add another starting pitcher and then additionally like have this line, run this lineup back for a full season when it was the best offense in baseball last year. And I'm not sure all of us can name everybody that played an inning at third base over last year because of how gross things were. Like, I think that's a win.
Shout out first baseman Oswald Peraza. I would go, if it's Bellinger back, I'd go Jojo Romero. He's safe. He's going to get traded probably. Like, that's like a safe, like bankable, could get traded. I think I prefer Wilson to Romero just like on my board just because Wilson misses more bats. But I think there's an appeal to Romero being younger, possibly being cheaper
he's
financially.
He's a ball guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's some command stuff that I don't love. And like, again, I prefer like your risk being age over your risk being I got to trade chips for you. And on top of that, you might not miss enough bats. Like there's some things that Romero, I like Romero. I'm just trying to like be self-deprecating, like, cause I think the ERA is shiny and I don't want to just be like, oh, he's got a low ERA. That's why I picked him. I hate picking players off that, but I do like Romero. I think he's solid. So
for the next question, I have a fan question from myself because I just thought about this. If we sign Bellinger, do you guys think Dominguez has to go or do you think it makes sense to keep him as of right now?
No, you shouldn't force it. If there's a trade available, and that's like the one thing that keeps me like, I know Weathers might be their like cashman out of nowhere move, but I have a weird feeling Dominguez can also be tied to this. If they were
Dominguez in a Mackenzie Gore trade,
oh, I would do that. I would do that. Yeah.
1,000%.
Yeah, and for all like the lefty stuff, oh, there's too many lefties, dude. I don't care. One of them's got a chip removed from his bone, so he's not part of the equation right now. The other is Ryan Weathers, who gets hurt all the time, and Max Fried's awesome. That's it. Like that. There's two guys who have significant injury risk, and another guy who kind of has some injury risk in Fried. Like I don't see a reason to care about these things. I don't. That's just me. If your four best starters are all lefties, that I'd be stunned. I'd be stunned. Like I'd completely be shocked. Get the best pitcher available, but I think Jason getting traded isn't a lock, and it shouldn't be a lock. You shouldn't like John Carlson's going to get hurt. Who's your 10th best position player if Stan gets hurt?
Yeah, it's probably Jason.
Especially if like Volpe isn't back before Stan gets hurt, which would happen if Stan gets hurt in spring again. Like, don't want to be a pessimist, just saying. Now, in the world where Bellinger doesn't come back, is it like Hayes and the same pitcher? Is that our kind of our TLDR here for an offseason?
I'd assume so. I think Hayes makes the most sense out of the available platoon guys.
Yeah.
I wanted Lane Thomas early on, but he re-signed pretty quickly. I mean, I would love to go get like a Brenton Doyle, like I was saying earlier in the offseason too, because then you're going the defensive route instead of the offensive route. That'd be interesting to me.
And that would be a scenario for me where it's like you do those two things and you're just like the team who can arguably be considered the favorite in the American League. And that kind of stinks. Like that stinks that that's the case. But I also don't think I don't want to understate what that would be. Like I don't want to understate what you would be or overstate what you would be in that scenario, if that makes sense.
I think that's why I wouldn't go crazy and cave to this Boris talk for Bellinger, right? Because if we don't get Bellinger back, there's still a good pathway to us being the best team in the league. So
I was gonna say one more outfielder I want to throw it because Chris and I talked about him a ton before. I think I might change my answer to Luis Robert. Just why not?
He's the backup plan looming, bro. Like I'm a firm believer that is the that just feels like the most like Cashman out of nowhere backup plan if they don't get this done with Scott Boras.
Yeah, I mean, I like him a lot, but the way I looked at his splits the other day, and I said, "My goodness, he had like a 68 WRC."
Yeah, we did talk about that. But
you got it. You got to. I don't want to be here. Adjust it. It's like Andrew. Oh yeah,
well, that brings it up to an 80.
I'm going to be honest. I go back and forth on Luis Robert every other day, whether I want him or not.
No, obviously, you love the defensive floor is fantastic, but it's kind of negated by the injuries because he's always hurt. So it's like,
yeah.
Do you do a pure platoon with him and Jason where you play Robert in center and Grisham in left against lefties and then Jason in left and Grisham in center against righties? Like, I'd be fine with that. I'd be fine gambling on the upside there. But in terms of he's going to cost $20 million this season and we're going to have to pay probably at least something to go get him.
So that's a good point.
I don't think that's
like, but here,
I don't think that's perfect, like, but
the $20 million number like feels crazy until we see what kind of what this current like outfielder market even looks like.
That's fair. No, I mean, we don't have Bellinger on the books. We're going to be under probably the budget that we're planning on anyway, so it would be a fine fit, but I don't know.
Challenge trade Jazz Chisholm for Randy Rosarena is the worst thing. I don't want that to happen. I just want that to be put out there. I've seen that. I've seen some people suggest, like, could you do Jazz for Randy Rosarena? I want nothing to do with
Hell
that.
No.
I will, Hell like, no. Like, I want to make it clear. If we're going to do a challenge trade, I want some shit like Jason for, like, a starter I've never heard of. But, like, or, like, some type of shit where it's like, oh, wow, I can, like, let me get into the lab and talk about this. Not some, like, Randy, my God, we traded Randy, Jazz. I don't
like
want that.
Randy. I like Randy, trust me. But he's an aura and hype moments player. He is, He's like a slightly more complete Jason Dominguez, in my opinion. Terrible outfielder. Has pop, has speed, but like strikes out a lot. I don't know. I don't love the fit here, especially because we got the big old left field that's gonna be bad for his defense and his offense.
Yeah, just saying again, like I just want to make it clear, if we do a challenge trade, I want it to have nothing to do with Jazz Chisholm, Bellinger or no Bellinger. I want it to have, unless it's like some insane overpay, I want nothing to do with it. Don't give me your 1 year rental who produced less WAR last season. I want nothing to do with it. Let's say
talks Jazz should be in right now are extension talks.
Bingo.
I would agree. Now this is an outfield question as well, so that's why I want to segue into this one, which is from can I read this name? Like, this is such a troll name. GlizzyBoy69430 is an insane troll name. But can Spencer Jones be a plan B or C for the Yankees in an outfield situation, the case where there's no belly? Chris, we'll start with you. This is your boy. So I'm going
to but in Judge's prime, I would hate for him to be out there as plan B, to be honest. But I think, like, he is your backup center fielder, though, right? Like, that's what we're working with right now.
Yes, you know, that's where we're at right now.
I don't like the okay. We're gonna let Belly walk because we got Spencer Jones. Like, who needs Belly? You know, I don't like that. But I think I like him as the backup center fielder. Maybe.
He's like the break glass in case of emergency guy right now.
Yeah,
where it's like I think the defensive floor and the athleticism is high enough floor for me to be like, all right, if we need to, we can promote him early. But like he has so much more progress to make with the bat that like we've never seen him have a full season where he wasn't a 35-40% strikeout guy in the minors, which is like you tack another 5-10 percentage points onto that. Is he going to be striking out 45% of the time against major league pitching? Like, you don't know. You can't know that yet. So you got if he breaks out this season, then there might be a different story. But entering the season, if he's in the plans as anything but an emergency player, then I think that's an issue.
This is also part of my, like, I could go on this diatribe, but I will not. Every Yankee fan begging for some team to overpay Cody Bellinger. Like, please take him. Like, I see so many, like, I hope the Mets give him $40 million for 6 years. Like, why would you hope that? Why? What's the point of that? Like, if you want to say, I hope the Yankees don't overpay him, that's fine. But, yeah, I hope some other team ruins the Yankees' plans. Like, are you a masochist? Like, what's good with you, bro?
Alan Cashman ran a great propaganda campaign this past few weeks to turn the fans against Boras heavy.
Yes. This is pretty messy, I can't lie. But, yeah, Spencer Jones is a big reason why I want nothing to do with a world where the Yankees don't bring another guy who can play center field. Because No, like no. Trent Grisham being he had some hamstring tightness away from Spencer Jones having to come up in March is not nothing. Want nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I think that's why I'm kind of wary about the Austin Hayes idea because it's just
I kind of agree.
Pure platoon in left field with Jason. They both aren't great at defense.
I think they would end up signing Bader, and I kind of hate that. I think he's a terrible fit for us. I think he's such a bad fit. This is like part of the Bellinger thing too. Like every other outfield plan is so dog shit. Like it's so bad or unrealistic.
Robert's the best backup option now.
Think about that. Your best backup option is trading like a top 10 in your system and like more. I heard they asked for Will Warren for Luis Robert earlier this offseason. Like, dude, no.
They gotta relax.
No.
Like, look at his stats last year. You can't be
like, you know what I'm saying? Why do you think the Mets didn't trade for him last deadline and now when they've really wanted him for like 2 years now? David Stearns isn't an idiot. He's not trading because they don't want to trade that price. I'm not begging for Bellinger back, but shit, dude, our lives are a little bit easier, or the Yankees' lives are a little bit easier if he just comes back. So
the plan is so much clearer with him.
I just want it to be clear that, like, if Bellinger doesn't come back and he's overpaid for it, that the Yankees, like, anyone who said that they wanted another team to come in and overpay should not criticize the Yankees. That is all I ask. That's all I ask. And if he comes back, I'm not saying I'm expecting complete joys and flowers being thrown, but let's not pretend the team, like, got worse. Anywho, that's a different conversation. The final question we have here is from Scherzy Jerry, which is, what do you see the Yankees doing about the backup catcher position? Feel like we need a righty who is more than just a backup. Some names I like, Yoel Pozo, Liam Hicks, Miguel Amaya, Corey Lee. Feel like these guys are all buried on depth charts and are deployable. Joel Sherman mentioned that a backup right-handed catcher, something the Yankees are still looking at in like a recent segment he did on the Pinstripe Post. But who's your right-handed catcher pick? I don't think you have to pick from this pool only. I don't think any of us are going to pick from that pool. But Jacob, we'll start with you, man. Who are you taking? One.
We were talking about this earlier today. Gary Sanchez, the Sanchez, re-returning to the Yankees. That would be a really fun one. And listen, he was hurt. He had about three different injuries last year. He really can't catch. We've known that forever. The guy can't catch, but he's a catcher who doesn't play the position well. But man, he averaged 94 miles per hour on his exit velo this year. I don't care. Just if I knew for a fact that Austin Wells could give me 120 games behind the plate last season, Gary Sanchez would be my backup catcher this year. The issue is, which is what you guys are going to bring up about, you're going to shatter the dream a little bit, is in case Wells goes down, Gary Sanchez shouldn't be catching every day because that's just a miserable defensive value over time. I mean, if in the backup role as a pure backup, I would love to sign him as a minor league contract with an invite to spring training. Hope he heals up his knee and whatever else was hurt last year. Because when he came back from the injury list in June, he had like about 3 or 4 weeks where he was healthy there. He was mashing the ball. So it's like, there's still something there with him. And I'm never going to give that up because the guy can hit when he's right. So I would love to bring him into camp.
I'll back you up a little bit. Like, if Austin Wells goes down, you still don't have to play him every day at catcher. You can play Ben Rice back there, too. So you have some versatility a little bit. But now, yeah, two not great defensive catchers. Yeah. But you'd get a lot of hard-hit balls.
Yeah.
What's Higgy like up to that these days, man?
You know, I was going to joke and say you got to bring back the Higgster, but the Higgster has not been particularly great defensively, but that's fine, I think. Like, he's still a plus framer. He's just not great at everything else. He's actually really bad at everything else, but that's like fine for me. Like, if you're a -1 defensively at catcher, you're still a catcher. So that Matt, like, I'm not going to say this guy's brutal watch back there. It's like, you know, he's fine. And, you know, he still has a little bit of juice in his bat. Like this year, 93 WRC plus. I don't think the Rangers are going to trade him. I know they have Danny Jansen, who's technically a right-handed hitting catcher. But I just, the Rangers kind of need him, right? Like, the Rangers need catching. Their catching room is not great. They don't have, like, an obvious backup I can think of. Like, William McIver's on the roster. Do you know who William McIver is?
Never heard of that guy in my life.
Yeah, so, he's a minor league free agent. Like, he played with the – like, he wasn't even, like, a major league free agent. So, they claimed him off waivers in November. Point is, Jose Herrera is, like, not good either. And Cooper Johnson, like, they're non-roster invites. I don't foresee – maybe they trade for Escara. Like, maybe Escara is actually a good fit with – Jansen as the starter, like, actually, it kind of makes sense in my head. Honestly, that actually kind of makes a lot of sense, right? Like, J.C. Ascaro for Kyle Gashioka.
We just saw you talk yourself into that.
No, like,
live on the air.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. No, it actually, like, makes a great deal of sense. Maybe you can, like, get a prospect because you're trading the cheaper player with more years of control. Not saying it's anything crazy, but, like, some random dude we've never heard of and we'll never hear of again. Like, that's fine with me. Or maybe the... That's fair. I mean, I'm just spitballing. Like, I don't know. I don't have any other better ideas.
Even though JC and Wells have a similar profile offensively, I think JC's the best backup option just because he has that defensive floor that if Wells goes down, he's going to be a better everyday option than any other backup we can bring in. So, like I said, I'd like to bring in someone like Gary into camp just to see what he has left in the tank. But I don't know. I wouldn't dedicate anything more than that to any of these righties, unless there's someone out there with really good defensive metrics that we are not thinking of right now. Like, I don't know how Christian Vasquez has been recently. He's probably
washed, yeah, he's probably cooked. I think that my last note on the catching position is to kind of like talk about Ascaro a little bit in the sense of you need at least one guy on your roster who's good defensively. Ascaro has minor league options. It's not the end of the world if he gets options to start the season because you're going to need catchers eventually. I'm sure they'll find a non-roster invite. They found Alex Jackson last year and ended up being like a one war catcher in a very small sample size, which is, you know, value. Like I would have taken one war out of my backup catcher. I would take one war out of my backup catcher this year if he was asked to play a handful of games. I'm just not sure that player exists for the Yankees from the right-handed side, and I don't think you should force it. I think Cashman mentioned this, where it's like, I'm not going to downgrade to get a righty, which is good roster philosophy. I know that, like, I've said, like, hey, the Twins signed Victor Caratini. Are they going to, like, trade Ryan Jeffers? But that feels like trading for a starter to be a backup. There's a team that will value Ryan Jeffers more if they need a catcher and go out and get him. And that team will not be the Yankees if that's the case. And Jeffers doesn't have, like, crazy versatility to, like, play another position of serious need. He's not, like, a great defensive first baseman or even a first baseman, so... Yeah, like I don't.
Honestly, if we thought this was such a big position, like a big need, I think we probably would have gone out and gotten a Caratini for the contract that he signed.
I also think, again, like there's probably a like there's if you sign Jonah Heim to a minor league contract with an invite to spring training, are we upset about that being the catcher in competition with Ascaro?
Probably not.
Like he's a career 104 WRC plus 733 OPS against lefties.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, that's why I want Gary for the nostalgia factor. He's kind of the same type of guy. Just bring him in, compete, and then if he has a big spring, you put him on the opening day roster.
I mean,
and then
if I'll even say down, this.
Bring up JC.
If he has a big spring, but you don't want to, but you don't have, like, room for him. Like, let's say he has, like, a good spring, not a great spring. Ascaro has a great spring. Like, I don't know, some situation where you don't roster him. Someone's going to trade for him. Yeah, you can, like, there is a benefit, or you can trade Ascaro. Like, there's a benefit. You got, I know John.
Yeah, you can figure it out because people are gonna. There's gonna be teams making cuts. There's gonna be situations where there's gonna be a fit there. So yeah, absolutely. You're gonna want to bring. I'm sure they're absolutely gonna bring in someone to compete for a spot in the next few weeks for pitchers and catchers.
You traded for somebody when it's upstarting for you in the postseason at first base a little bit for Ben Werfet. That's like, I'm not saying John Birdie was a monster, but like he was one of the better options they could get to be a util guy for them. I'm sure there's something like that out there. I'm sure there's something like that out there at a different position. Maybe it's a reliever. Maybe it's a 1 year of a mediocre reliever who they like. I don't know. I don't really care. Any ben final Rortfett, notes you guys have?
Ben Rortfett, 206 WRC plus for the world champion Los Angeles Dodgers in the postseason. That's all I'll say.
Wow. I mean, that's a he's clutching.
Catching tree is just unbelievable.
The Yankees catching tree is insane, actually. Like, it's pretty nuts. Who's the worst catcher they've produced? Like, is it Augustin Ramirez? Is he the worst catcher of the last, like, 3-4 years?
Yeah, they've probably. He's just, really catch down there. Just DH.
I think he's going to be a good hitter.
I think he's going to mash. I don't think he can play first base. I watched him play some first. It's rough. Like, it's bad. But we'll see. I mean, he's an inexperienced first baseman, so we'll see with him. I mean, I won't really see. I'm not going to be watching the Marlins much this year. No offense. Well, look, I don't have any, like, scouting to do. Like, Sandy isn't...
Baseball, baby. That's my guy. It's my goat.
That is your guy. I mean, Pendick's a good GM.
I shook hands with him at the winter meetings, which is very...
Really? Yeah, That's dope.
Seconds. It was very sick.
I'm sure that... I think Pendick would benefit from your insight in the front office. Could you imagine, like, that announcement on this podcast? Yeah, we're losing Jacob to an advisory role with the Miami Marlins.
Advisory, like, I'm above all the other early 20s out of college analyst.
Peter Bendix remembered that handshake, and he remembered his recommendation to not trade Sandy because of the financial implications. And he was like, that that was smart.
No, I told him about the video I made about him.
Really?
I didn't tell him what it was called. I was like, yeah, I make baseball content. I made a video about you. I was like, I really appreciate the way you guys find talent in the margins. And he seemed like he was happy. He seemed like he appreciated that what he does is seen by the MLB world, which is nice. But I didn't tell him what it was called, because it's called The Nerd Who's Saving the Marlins. I feel like that's kind of disrespectful if you took it the wrong way. So I didn't want to tell him to his face. I clickbaited him being an atypical sports world person for the sake of, how is this guy who's never played baseball doing a good job?
But yeah. Well, hey, you have to explain it to a general audience. I'm sure if you explain that in its entire context, in just one straight sentence. Just deflect. Just my deflect.
Editor. You just know my editor's me.
Yeah. Hey. Deflect. He has no deflect. I mean, now he'll know. Now he'll know. This is out there. And yeah, I know Peter Bendix is
every episode.
Yes. Peter Bendix is a diehard Fireside Yankees fan.
He was about
Yankees
to trade us Sandy until a few weeks ago. I said it doesn't make sense for them to trade Sandy.
He was going
to
trade us Edward Cabrera until he realized he could have gotten more value from the Yankees. And he was like, no, we can't do this. This can't happen. Or maybe he did it because he knows his elbow's pulled pork. He doesn't want to mess with your team, man. Maybe that's it.
He's doing it to help us.
But we appreciate you guys tuning in here on Fireside Yankees and having our conversation about Peter Bendix at the end. But you guys are the best. We really appreciate your support. You guys have been awesome, especially in the month of January. If you are watching this and you're not subscribed and you're watching until the end, that's pretty crazy. You should subscribe. You'll get more content. We usually have these record these on Mondays and drop these on Tuesdays. This is an abnormal drop. So, the usual is Tuesdays, but, we really appreciate your support here. Like, subscribe. You can check out And That's Baseball, which is Jacob. You can check out his YouTube channel. Link will be in the description. Chris does Dead Air Sports.
Forget that. We do Fireside Baseball.
We do Fireside Baseball. It is a good point. But I'm also going to plug Dead Air Sports.
No, we're not plugging that. We're plugging Fireside Baseball. Because soon as we
the national championship just ended. How are people going to segue from like that? You know, people are going to go, man, I wish I could hear Chris talk more about college football. Yeah, Where the hell can I do that?
Let me talk about baseball. I'm recording a notebook after this.
Ooh, okay. So we'll that'll be plugged all in the description below. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. See you guys the next one. Peace out, everybody.
Perfect.